Well, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, or good evening, or whenever it is that you've chosen to listen to this podcast episode. I am just so glad that you are here with us today. For those of you who are new, I'm giving you an extra special welcome. Thank you so much for giving this little community a try. For those of you who've been around for a little while, you know that Home on Purpose is all about getting your life at home to be just a little bit easier. This means making your spaces function a little better, let your daily routines run a little more smoothly, and just make it easier to keep your stuff in order. Because managing your home should not feel like this heavy burden, this impossible challenge that saps all of your energy. Now, obviously, managing a home is always going to take work. It's never going to be a piece of cake, but that work should feel reasonably doable. Now, over the years, as I've worked with all sorts of different women with totally different backgrounds and different household situations and different sizes of families and different sizes of homes, I see the same struggles come up again and again and again. And in this podcast episode, I'm going to focus on one of the most common struggles by far, and that is the extra and unnecessary stuff. Generally speaking, the more stuff you own, the more items you are responsible for, the more things need a place and need to be kept in that correct place, that means the harder it is to keep your home in order. This is particularly true if a bunch of that stuff that we're trying to manage doesn't even serve a purpose in the first place. All that extra and unnecessary stuff that sits around not being used just gets in your way. It's like clogging up your home, and that makes it harder for things to flow smoothly. And we know this to be true. Every time we go to tidy up our home and try to put things away where they belong, we open that closet, we see all of that stuff still sitting there. Every time you pull into your driveway and you wish you could park your car in the garage instead of on the driveway, and then you open the garage door and you see all of those boxes and bins, and you tell yourself over and over again, one of these days, I've really got to get my act together and just downsize. We see the situation very clearly when we stand back, when we zoom out and take that panoramic picture of our home situation. The difficulty starts when we actually get into the process of making decisions. When we roll up our sleeves and start sifting through our stuff, we zoom in all the way in on each individual item. We hold up one small thing and ask, should I keep this? And almost always, we can find a valid reason to keep it. Should I keep this book? Well, I started it and I really should finish it someday. Should I keep this dress? Well, I haven't worn it in a couple of years, but I might wear it again one day. Should I keep the popsicle molds? Well, the kids and I did make popsicles one weekend last summer, and everyone seemed to enjoy them. And so we keep the book, we keep the dress, we keep the popsicle molds. These items are so small, they don't really feel like they make that big of a difference anyway. And it's not like it's complete junk. It does serve some sort of purpose. And so we do all of this work of emptying the closets, emptying the cabinets, spreading everything out, sifting, sorting, and making decisions. And at the end of the day, we've only gotten rid of like two things. That's when we zoom back out to the big picture and realize, ugh, we still have way too much stuff. The closet is better organized than it was before, and we've gotten rid of a couple of things, but we haven't really made any true progress in solving the big problem of all the extra and unnecessary stuff. So that approach to downsizing, even though it's the most common approach, doesn't work. We cannot simply look at each item one at a time and ask, should I keep this? We have to change the conversation, change the question. We need a whole new approach. And that's what I'm going to share with you in this episode. I'm going to show you a totally different way to go about downsizing that not only makes it easier to make decisions, but it ultimately leads to real progress. Here's the key to the whole thing. You have to set a specific goal before you get started. If you simply say, I should probably get rid of some of this stuff, that's too vague. That's like the mother of the bride saying to her daughter, you can have a nice wedding, just don't spend too much. Yeah, good luck with that, mom. That bride is going to try on dress after dress after dress, and that price tag is going to slowly creep up and up and up. She's going to say things like, but a live band is so much nicer than a DJ, and but what if the photographer misses an important moment? You know what? We really should have two cameras going at all times. And I know these flowers are more expensive, but ugh, they just fit this theme so much better. And the next thing you know, the price of the wedding has skyrocketed. That doesn't work. The only way that mother of the bride can stop her daughter from spending too much is to set a specific limit, an actual dollar amount that the bride cannot go over. With a budget in place, the bride's decision-making process automatically becomes totally different. If she wants that dress that's $1,000 over what she wanted to spend, then that's $1,000 less that she has to spend somewhere else, like on the flowers or the photographers. That gives her a frame of reference to make decisions. We all operate this way. We all make wiser and more thoughtful choices when we are working within a budget. What I'm suggesting is that we take this same approach and apply it to our stuff in our homes. I'm going to explain what I mean in just a minute, but there's something I want you to do first. Since you're listening to this episode, I'm guessing that you've already come to the conclusion that you generally have too much stuff. But before we continue, I want you to take a moment and get specific. Think about your home right now. Which space bothers you the most? Which room feels overcrowded? Which closet do you wish weren't so packed with stuff? Which category has become too overgrown recently? Like, if I gave you 3 free days to do nothing but downsize, which project would you tackle first? So as I walk you through the steps of downsizing the easy way, I'm going to use a specific example from my own life. And as you imagine me going through the steps in my home, also visualize yourself going through the same steps in your home. It also helps to try and anticipate any little trouble spots that are likely to pop up along the way and think about how you might solve those problems before they begin. Are you ready? Here we go. As my example from my life, I will share about how I downsized one of the hardest categories, and that was my kids' toys. Right now, my kids are 7 and 9, and we recently moved from Colorado to California. Now, in our old house, we had what a lot of Colorado houses have, a really big basement, and we turned a big portion of it into the play area. And little by little, over the course of the 3 years that we lived there, we accumulated far too many toys. I mean, these kids had more toys than they had time to play with. So as I got ready to downsize the house, which we always do before we move, I knew that the toys would be one of the most important projects. On top of that, I also predicted, correctly as it turns out, that our California house would be smaller. Most California houses don't have a giant basement. I also thought about the fact that the kids are getting older, and they're going to be spending more and more time playing sports, doing activities, they're going to have more and more homework, and so they would be spending less and less time playing with toys. So you put it all together, and we definitely needed to downsize before the move. Now, when I explained this big picture idea to my children, they got it. They agreed. They said, yeah, that makes sense. We probably have too many toys. But I also knew that if I just held up one toy at a time and asked, should we keep this? Their answer would always be yes, and they would always have the same explanation. Well, we do play with it sometimes, so I knew that wasn't going to work. Instead, I decided to set a physical limit on how many toys they could keep. They would be free to decide which toys they kept and which toys they got rid of, but they would not be allowed to go over budget. Right there, though, I predicted a problem. We had so much stuff and so many different kinds of toys, right? Some belonged only to my daughter, some belonged only to my son, some were things that just the kids played with, some were things that the whole family used, like board games. It was going to be a complicated project. Also, the project was so big that it would definitely take more than one day. So to stop the kids from getting overwhelmed and to give them, you know, the excitement and joy of making progress, I had to separate the project into little bite-sized pieces. So I'm going to walk you through how I did it step by step. And again, even if your project isn't toys specifically, you can still think about how you might follow this same process with your category in mind. So the first step that we took was emptying all of the toys out of all of the basement storage, and we spread it all across the basement floor. We also gathered everything from the rest of the house, like their bedrooms and the family room, that really belonged in the basement. This made a huge mess. I mean, it was pretty awful. But you know what? It was a useful mess. Seeing that ginormous ocean of toys really let the kids feel the weight of the excess. This wasn't just a vague idea, we probably should downsize a little bit. It was, no, seriously, ridiculously, we have absolutely way too many toys. I even took a few pictures of that ocean of toys with my phone. That way later, when they inevitably started complaining and whining, don't make us downsize, I could just show them that basement flooded with toys as a reminder. Once all the toys were gathered, step two, in this case, was to separate everything into categories. So we put all the board games and puzzles over here, all of the building and constructing type toys over there, the arts and crafts went over there, and so on. We also made separate piles for the toys that only my daughter played with, like her My Little Pony collection, and another pile of stuff that only my son cared about, like his Star Wars action figure stuff. That way, now each pile became its own mini project, and it had a clear beginning and ending. We could downsize, organize, and put away one category of stuff and feel that milestone, feel that positive progress, even though the rest of the basement was still a mess. Once that was done, I was ready to set the physical limits. You could call it a storage budget, if you will, or a space budget. So just like the bride needed a budget to keep her spending in check, my kids needed specific boundaries to guide their downsizing decisions. If you've seen any of the toy videos from back in my Colorado house, you see me sitting in front of this large bank of cubicle shelves with different colored bins. So we decided that my son could fill the four red bins on the left with his personal toys, and my daughter could fill the four purple bins on the right with hers, and then the six green bins that were in the middle could be filled with the shared toys. And then we decided all of the art supplies must fit nicely in the art cart. And then for the projects like, you know, the beading collection or the Play-Doh kits and whatever, I found a large plastic tote bin and I said, all of the craft projects that you want to keep must fit in this bin. We designated specific limited spaces for the puzzles and the board games and every other category of toys. Now, although I didn't know yet which toys my kids would keep, I knew that if we stuck to each one of those limits, the toy collection would shrink down to a much more manageable size and that there would be a designated place for everything. I'm going to pause right there because you're probably thinking, oh my goodness, that sounds like a lot of work, and she hasn't even downsized yet. And you're absolutely right. It took an entire Saturday to do just those three steps, and we hadn't gotten rid of anything yet. But you know what? It was an incredibly productive day, because from that moment on, the kids and I were all on the same page, and that's a really big deal. We all had a very clear vision of where we were headed, and after spending a day wading through a swamp of toys, the kids were really getting annoyed with how much stuff was everywhere, which went a long way towards getting them on board emotionally with deleting some of this stuff. So yes, it was a lot of work, but when it was time to start making actual decisions, that downsizing process was so much easier after having laid all of this groundwork first. So I took them out to ice cream and I said, "Thank you so much for all of that wonderful work." And the next day after church, we came home and we rolled up our sleeves and started the actual process of downsizing. Now, since corporate decisions are harder, I had them start with their own personal toys first. And this is where setting the physical limits started to have that real power. So my daughter, knowing that she only had four purple bins to spend on her own personal toys, she didn't pick up one toy at a time and just casually ask, "Do I think maybe one day I'll play with this? Yes, I guess I'll keep it." That's not how it worked. Instead, she sifted through all of her toy collection and scanned for her absolute favorites first. She searched for the toys that she would never dream of saying goodbye to and made sure to claim space for those ones first. So her favorite My Little Ponies, her favorite dress-up stuff. She loves her veterinary kit. And so she put those in the bins. She did not want to run out of space for those things. That filled up about two of the four bins. And then I noticed that she was slowing down and having some trouble. And so I joined her and helped her out a little bit. I said, "Okay, sweetie, you've already saved your veterinary kit. So is it worth the space to keep the doctor's kit also?" And she was really struggling because the doctor's kit had specific little tools, like the prescription pad, that the veterinary kit didn't have. So she was really wrestling with that decision, and I came alongside her and said, "You know, you don't have to save the entire doctor's kit. You can just pick out some of those extra tools, like the prescription pad, and just add it to the veterinary kit." And it was cute. She was like, "I can do that?" And it's like, "Yeah, it's not all or nothing. You can pick whatever you want to save and delete whatever you want to delete." And that was a huge relief to her because she liked the stethoscope from the doctor's kit better. So she made that trade and she grabbed the prescription pad and kept on that one and then got rid of some of the other things that she knew she didn't play with. So she kind of pieced together a doctor's set that she really wanted to keep and got rid of the rest. And she kept making decisions just like that until all four of her purple bins were full. Now that was a difficult moment for her, because at that moment she had to look at all the rest of her toys that were still on the floor, and she started feeling really sad about having to say goodbye to those. And this is yet another reason why the physical limit approach is so helpful, because at this step of the process, she can make what I call tradesies. I told my daughter, "Hey, you're free to keep any of these other toys. All you have to do is choose something else from your bins to delete to make room." I never told my kids what specifically to keep. I only told them that they had to stick to the budget. And it totally worked. She spent about a half an hour more rummaging through her bins, looking at the stuff still on the floor and making trades. One thing that she noticed pretty quickly is that her dress-up clothes take up a lot of room, and she didn't need all of her princess dresses, and so she chose a couple of her least favorites. The one she was already starting to outgrow anyway, she got rid of those, and that cleared just enough room to save one more handful of stuff from the floor. Now, after that, she was still sad to say goodbye, of course, but she definitely felt better about the whole thing, knowing that the stuff in the bins was more important than the stuff she was saying goodbye to. I also used one more strategy to help relieve the pain, and this works really well for kids. I promised my son and my daughter that I would not donate their extra stuff right away. I put it all in cardboard boxes and I stored it in the garage for about a week. If they really missed a specific toy, then they could have one last chance to do one last round of tradesies before the boxes disappeared. Now, as I predicted, once the toys were out of sight, out of mind, the kids totally forgot that they even existed. And when they realized they didn't even remember what was in the boxes, I took the opportunity to say, great, that means you made really good choices and you saved the things that you really truly care about. Okay, so let's go back to the basement. When my daughter's purple bins were full and her extra toys were gone, and my son's red bins were full and his extra toys were gone, I could tell that they were done for the day. So we ate some cookies and we came back the next morning and worked through the next few categories. And every time we finished a pile of toys, like the board games and the puzzles are done, and we stuck to our physical limit, we were able to put the keepers away nicely organized, and all of the extra stuff disappeared. And so again, even though the rest of the basement was still messy, seeing that progress really helped keep everybody motivated to continue. And when we finished that last pile, it actually felt like the whole basement had had, for lack of a better analogy, liposuction, right? All of their toys fit nicely in their designated storage spaces. The whole play area was organized, it was clean. And as luck would have it, our particular Salvation Army branch happened to be low on toys at that time, and so they were very, very grateful to get our donations. And you know, I love a good win-win. And it made the kids feel so much better to know that their donations were going to bless families in need. So looking back, obviously, that whole downsizing project was a lot of work. And as I mentioned at the beginning, this is one of the most difficult categories to tackle. You know, you're limited by your kids' attention spans and their energy runs out, so you can't do any more. You have to wait for your children to make the decisions. And then, of course, you have to be very thoughtful and conscientious about their emotions as well. But even this toughest category was so much easier to downsize because I used this approach of setting a physical limit for each category and sticking to it, not allowing myself or my kids to go over budget. This approach is so effective that you see me using it all over Home on Purpose. In every single lesson series, the kitchen series, the wardrobe series, definitely it shows up in the long-term storage series, right? If there was ever a room in anybody's home that really could use some downsizing, it's probably the garage or the basement or the attic storage. And it also shows up in my instructional guides, like the Guide to Taming the Toys definitely talks about getting the kids on board with reducing their toy collections and setting physical limits that they agree with is a big part of that. So earlier in this episode, I had you think about one specific downsizing project that you would love to tackle first, and now I'm going to give you a challenge. Next to this podcast episode, you'll see three different buttons, and I want you to pick one. If you're more interested in watching videos or even just kind of listening to them podcast style, click on the lesson series buttons. If you prefer to read, then click on the instructional guides. Look at all of the different topics that we have available and choose one area of your home to tackle first. Now, I know sometimes people think, well, I don't have time right now to actually start the project, and that's okay. All I'm asking you to do is read through the instructional guide, or you can even binge watch all of the lesson videos and wrap your mind around the project. Create a vision for that area of your home. Imagine how it's going to feel at the end of the process when that area of your home has gotten the, I'll use the word again, liposuction, where it's just lost all of the extra weight. Imagine how it's going to feel to have all that extra elbow room and to know that everything that's in that closet or that cabinet or is sitting on that counter is there because you decided really and truly it was worth keeping. It's there on purpose for a purpose and it's in its designated spot. Your home will just be so much easier to keep in order, so much easier to manage. It won't feel like this heavy burden, like this impossible challenge. You can just flow through your day so much more smoothly. And by the way, I know that at this point in time, my lesson series and instructional guides do not cover the entire house just yet. I'm working on it. More is coming, but right now I know I haven't quite gotten there. So if you don't see the specific topic that you're really wanting to work on, you can always request a personal consultation with me. All you do is fill out the form, tell me what area of your home you want to work on, what are your goals, what are your struggles, and then we meet up on video chat and we work together to create a customized plan of action just for you. Well, I hope that you found this episode of the Home on Purpose podcast helpful. I hope that now you can get a little more excited and a little more motivated to take control of your stuff and your spaces, knowing you have an approach that will work. Thank you again for joining me. And until next time, this is Tricia Childers with Home on Purpose.